Thank you. Tonight, our speaker is Milton M. from Van Nuys.
Good evening. My name is Milton Merle, and I'm a grateful alcoholic.
Hi, Milton.
I'm glad to be here, I think. I'd like to welcome the newcomers. There were 10 of them. I counted them. And I also would like to congratulate the CHIP people, the people who took their birthday. Birthday cakes. One of the big reasons I'm glad, I've been around this program for a little while. It's obvious that a lot of people who've been around this program for a little while are quick to say, and I wonder why they do it. Because I see a lot of young people in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, the first thing they say, I'm so glad to see these wonderful young people here. You know. As far as I'm concerned, you got here on time, in time. I believe that you got here on time, in time. Thank God you got here. And I'm grateful to be able to be around to see newer people coming into Alcoholics Anonymous for a very selfish reason. I may not hold much hope for you, but anyway, you keep coming back anyway. The reason I'm so grateful to see newcomers come into Alcoholics Anonymous because they bring me the most important message I need to know. And the reason I say they bring me the most important message I need to know is because I have a mind that's trained to forget. It's absolutely trained to forget. And they bring me the most important message I need to know. And that alcohol is still kicking ass out there, and I got to go find out. It's that simple. I haven't got to go out there to find out because you have brought the message into me because I'm aware of the fact that I have a mind that's trained to forget. I don't care how long I've been sober, I still have that mind that's trained to forget. Because 3 weeks ago, I couldn't tell you what kind of pain I was in to save my life, if I was in any. Because I have a mind that's trained to forget. That's why I go to meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm not here to win friends and influence people. I'm not here for that at all. I'm here to keep from dying. Because this is life and death. I don't know what you're here for. I'm not here to play tiddlywinks. I'm here because if I go out there, I die. In here, I got a chance to survive and live one more day with as destructive a mind as I have. On September the 6th, that's next month, I'll be sober 23 years, and I'm still destructive. I came to Alcoholics Anonymous in 1967, a drunken asshole. I got sober, and I was still an asshole. And it's almost 23 years later, I'm still an asshole. But the difference is, I quit fighting it and accepted it. And the most unique thing I have found out for me is that when I woke up at 6 o'clock this morning until now, I haven't had to be an asshole, and that's freedom. That's freedom. I got here in Alcoholics Anonymous the first time in 1948. Don't try to guess my age. I still look good, huh? How about that, Ski? Ski's an old friend of mine. And I did not think I was an alcoholic. And there's no doubt in my mind tonight there's a lot of you in here that really don't think you're alcoholics. You're just a little down on your luck. Run into a little bad bump in the road. that the world is still, somebody said, life ain't fair. Someone said it tonight. And life, nobody ever told me it was going to be fair. Life will never be fair. That's what I came in. I thought, well, life ain't fair, but just give me one more little time and get my shit together, I'll be all right. And there's no doubt in my room that people sitting in this room tonight are saying, well, if I get to Alcoholics Anonymous and get my shit together, I'll go back out there and I'll try it one more time my way, because I'll have the magic system. You know, if you're smart like I am, and I'm kind of, I have what I call a genius type mind. I'm not a genius. It's just a genius type mind. I've got the kind of mind that make puking make sense. Like I make going to jails make sense too. And the reason I made that, I kept doing it over and over, and you got to rationalize it to make it make sense to go back and do the same thing over again. I never in my life said, well, I'm going to take a drink and go to jail. I never did that. That was never my intentions. Well, I think I'll tell my wife, well, sweetheart, I think I'll take a drink and go to jail tonight. But somehow or other, I'd always go to jail. Yeah. And I thought that I didn't have the right combination. If I could get the right combination down, the right mixture, you know, if I could just get it right, just right. You know that one time high you get where everything is just mellow? Ooh, man, it just, you lay back and just everything is just fine. And you kind of, oh, you know. You don't give a shit what anybody thinks. You just, oh. You know, it's just wonderful, right? One time only. One time only. From that point on, you're doomed to overshoot the mark every time. From that point on, you're doomed to do some more puking. From that point on, you're doomed to go into the bathroom in a bar and stick your fingers down your throat and get some out so you get some more in. That's that genius type mind. I used to think, God, I'm clever. You know when you feel your head kind of going a little bit too fast that way, and you're trying to get, you've missed the glow. You've missed it, and your head's going that way a little bit, and your head says, uh-uh, you better get rid of some of that booze. And your genius mind takes over and says, go in the bathroom and stick your fingers down your throat and get rid of some of it. Ah, you go ahead and do it, and you come back out, and you're all geared now. You look in the mirror, and you know you're looking right. Getting ready to do it again. And you wonder why you do that. You see, that's the kind of drinker I was. And by 1948, when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous the first time, I did not think I was an alcoholic. I thought that I hadn't had the right opportunities in life. I thought nobody appreciated this talent I had. And if I could just get it together, I'd be all right. And I remember in 1948, by 1948, I'm going to tell you what my case was like in 1948. I'm going to tell you what my disease of denial is like. By 1948, I had been arrested 20 times. I had made 4 nut wards. I know what it is to be in 4-point restraints, laid up there like that, like Jesus nailed to the cross, right? I had lost a wife and 2 children. I had run away from home time and time again looking for the right woman. Because the woman I had never understood me. You know how it is. You know, the reason I drank is my wife didn't understand me. The other reason I drank was because my mother told me to give my life to Jesus. The reason I was an alcoholic was because of my mom and my daddy and my wives and all that. That's the reason I drank. If you were married to somebody like her and had a mama like that, and you had a brother over there that was so damn smart you could never measure up to what he was like, who wouldn't drink? Well, those are the reasons I used. And by 1948, I should have been ready to surrender, and I wasn't. By 1948, I had run away from home the final time, because I used to run away from home a lot looking for the right woman. I don't know whether you guys did that, but man, but I was always looking for the right one. Looking for somebody who would understand me. Someone that would understand me. And the reason I kept looking for someone to understand me, I found out, was because I didn't. The reason I kept looking for somebody to love me and demanded you love me was because I couldn't love me. I couldn't say that I don't love me. And so I was looking for somebody else to fill it up for me. And it never happened. My then wife had put me out because I was never around for those two children we had. I was drunk every time each one of them were born, and I just wasn't there, and that was never my intentions. It was never my intentions. I wanted to be a father. I wanted to be a father. I wanted to be a husband, but I didn't have the ability to say, I don't know how to do this. Alcoholics know everything. And if you want to know what a spiritual awakening is, to be able to say, I don't know. I just don't know. But I couldn't know. I couldn't tell that woman I know how to be a husband. I didn't know how to be a father. I didn't know how to do that. I couldn't even tell her, I'm not a man. I didn't know how to be a man. Yet still, I wanted to be a man in the worst kind of way. I tried everything I knew how to be a man, whatever that is. I talked the man talk, did the man walk, I did all the man things, you know, and I was steadily trying to prove myself to be a man, and the reason I was trying to prove myself to be a man is because deep down inside I knew I wasn't, and I had to hide that one. When that wife put me out, I got even with her and my mother, and I moved into a whorehouse. It was my I drank the kind of alcohol now that told me I could be a pimp, right? I'm scared of girls, but I could be a pimp. I moved into a whorehouse that was right across the street from the church my then wife and mother attended. I thought that was smart. I didn't think it was dumb. I thought that's smart. Get a house full of women to take care of you. Yeah. But if you drink wine, you ain't going to do too well. So I drank a lot of wine and snorted a lot of heroin in those days. We called it horse in those days. We used to bust caps and snort a lot. Snort and puke a lot. God, I puke. Oh. And the more you puke, when you're snorting, man, the more you puke, God would say, hey, man, that's good shit. You know. And I said, I'm puking like this. Now, I'm a natural puker. I really am. I really am. I'm not just saying it just for any levity. I use puking to get my mother's attention. I know how to do that now. I'm not that far removed. I don't want to give you the idea that I got here and got wonderful. I can puke anytime I need it. I just haven't needed it today. That's all. It hasn't gone away. I can puke and spot it, tell you right where I'm going to spot it. Want to see me do it? I moved in that whorehouse, and my message to the world was this. If you're married to that woman, and that other one over there is your mother, this is what you'll be reduced to. A pimp in a whorehouse. I wanted all the church people to see me. And I'd stand right on the front porch so they could see me. Now, I didn't have any resentments. I want you to know that. But that's where I was. And the most amazing thing happened in that whorehouse. I got arrested for the final time. I've never been arrested since. And I got arrested because I stole some money from a cousin of mine. He and I used to go out and drink and have a good time together. And he had me arrested. Thank God he did. And I stood before a judge that following morning. And for the first time in many years, jail bothered me. You know, when I first went to jail, I was very angry and very hostile. I was working for a black newspaper back in Newark, New Jersey. That's where I was born. And they had arrested me. The cops had arrested me. And how they arrested me was this. Let me tell you how stupid I am. That's just plain stupidity. You know, Drunks are smart. They just do stupid things. That's what they do, you know. How stupid I was. Now, I had never written a newspaper story in my life. But I was working in the ad copy department. I was selling ad copy for this newspaper. And all at once, I'm sitting there on a half drunk, going to stop and get myself some hot dogs. Now, they said you're supposed to eat when you drink, right? So I would always eat hot dogs. I have a hang-up about hot dogs. Still love them to this day. And I'd eat me some hot dogs and listen to the alcohol feed on them. Now, I don't know what... Well, that's kind of... I'd do that. And I'd sit in there eating these hot dogs, listening to the alcohol feed on them. And all at once, a couple of shots rang out. And my head said, now, Milton, get the story. And I took my little press card out and put it in the bill of my cap like they do in the movies, right? And I whipped my car around and followed the police car, and the police car is parked on a slant. You know how cops run up, and you guys know how cops run up, just slam them on it, just go there, boy, you know. And I took my little car, and I did the same damn thing, boy. And by this time, they had shot a guy. And he's laying there on the ground. And here I come with my newspaper press card, saying, give me the story, I'm from the press, and I ran right between the cop and his prisoner. In Newark, New Jersey, they shoot you for that. And I was indignant when they arrested me. The cop said, you look like one of them niggas, get in the van. So I was arrested, and I was very indignant about that. And I said to my boss, we'll get this cop's badge, and we got his badge. But by the 20th time I was arrested, my whole story had changed. You talk about changed attitudes? Alcohol had changed my attitude to, well, oh, hell, who doesn't get arrested once in a while? That's what alcohol did for me. And this final time when I was in jail, I had made the mistake. See, I knew jail. I know how to deal in jail. This time I was so loaded when I went to jail, I made the mistake of passing out on the lower bunk, and the guy above me puked on me. Well, I'm the puker. You don't puke on me, you know. I puke on women's shoes, and I just puke on people. When you're in the way, and it comes, you know. But somebody puked on me, and automatically jail didn't look like good living anymore. And just imagine the next day I stood there in front of that judge, smelly. And I looked in that judge, and I looked in the room, and my mother was there. And I knew Jesus had told her that I was there. Because Jesus told her everything. Everything. No matter what it was, he told her. Now, my mother, who was a very devout churchwoman, she loved me dearly. Make no bones about it. I like to blame my alcoholism on my mother, but no. My family had nothing to do with my alcoholism. And if you have any questions about your alcoholism, the only way, I'm going to give you a little bit of information that I think you should know. The only way you become an alcoholic is to drink alcohol. That may surprise some of you. But that's the only way you become an alcoholic. The only way you will get drunk is to drink. Now, that may surprise you, too. It's that simple. Because I can't hold my... I hear these new terms, hospital terms, I call them, talking about, I come from a dysfunctional family. The inference is that because I come from a dysfunctional family, I said the inference is that since I've come from a dysfunctional family, that's why I'm an alcoholic. I believe this. If you're in the family, it is dysfunctional. That's why you're an alcoholic. I stood before that judge, and I knew I had to keep his mouth shut, and my mother's mouth shut especially, because I knew Jesus would tell her to tell that judge everything about me. And I knew if that judge knew everything about me, he would jack the jail up and drop it on my head and forget me for the rest of my life. That's how I felt. And I remember standing in front of that judge, and I told him one of my patent lies. I'm a patent liar, believe me, I am. Magnificent. I told that judge, Judge, Your Honor, I'm a shell shock war veteran. I fought with Colonel Carlson's 2nd Marine Raiders down in Guadalcanal. And I was in hand-to-hand combat. I was part of the nucleus crew of the West Coast. I was in the Navy. But there was never a nucleus crew on the West Coast. He didn't know the difference. And I told him that I was in hand-to-hand combat, and I had a little cut here under my chin, so I had to cut, and I said, see, this is where I got in hand-to-hand combat, and the Japanese soldier lunged at me when his bayonet just clipped my chin, but I killed him. And I pulled my little pant legs up and showed him my little scrawny knees and said, look, this is where I got caught machine gun crossfire. That's what I told the judge. And then I said to him, Judge, Your Honor, I love everybody. Now, the reason I told him I loved everybody, that would keep Mama from jumping up. That would take care of him to know I was a kind, loving, understanding man. And I said, I even love my wife and my 2 children. Now, that was a wonderful picture. And then I told him the truth and didn't know I was telling him the truth. And the truth I told him, I couldn't even recognize it myself. I said, Judge, Your Honor, it just seems when I drink, everything goes wrong. And that was the truth. Every time I drank, something always went wrong. When I drank, I went to jail. When I drank, I lost a job and had to get another one. When I drank, I ran away from home. When I drank, I had to go to my mother and get money to feed my family. When I drank, I had to borrow money all over the place. When I drank, I had to put my brother's clothes in the pawn shop to get money to drink. Whenever I drank, things went wrong, and I didn't know I told the man the truth. And he said to me, well, I'm going to do something for you. I could send you to jail for 1 year. The charge will be embezzlement. But what I'm going to do is I'm going to give you 9 months of probation, and I'm going to send you to a man here in the Hall of Records of Newark, New Jersey. His name was Frank. And if you hang around Frank and these people, I won't even let this appear as a record. I said we'd do stupid things. We're not dumb. So I went to Alcoholics Anonymous, and that was in 1948. With a bunch of old men. And if you're sitting here like I was in my first meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, and your mind is saying this to you, when you get as old as they are, you need to quit doing whatever you're doing. You better get ready to meet your maker, because that's what I thought Alcoholics Anonymous was about. Meeting my maker way over yonder on the other side. I knew they were preparing to meet Jesus. I knew that. And I didn't want nothing to do with him, you see. But if you're thinking that way, that's perfectly all right. It's absolutely all right. If you're thinking here, some of you folks ain't going to like it, secretaries ain't going to like it, a lot of them don't like it. If you're sitting here and you got court papers and you need your court papers signed, you can sign them yourself. It's all right. Absolutely all right. Judge, don't care who's secretary here. But I pray that you remember this meeting. I pray that you remember this old crazy man standing up here talking this talk, as it may sound to you like, and it does seem so unrelated to what this whole thing is about. Just remember the meeting, because you will. You will. You are screwed up, whether you want to know it or not. You have been contaminated just sitting in the seat. Now, I know, because I felt that way when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, when I sat around these old men. It was in Montclair, New Jersey. And John, this old man, he's dead now, told me something I always share at a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And if you're like me that has those kind of thoughts, you will think the way I did, and you'll respond the way I did. John said to me, Milton, well, I want to tell you something, Milton. They don't make black and white whiskey because it all gets you drunk. Because he knew I might say, John, if you're black like me, white man's got his foot on your neck, ain't going to get anywhere in life. What is it left for you to do but get an old handkerchief head job? You know, and push somebody's broom. And work 5 days a week, get paid on Friday, stop at the bar and have a few drinks with the boys, and go home and beat your wife. That's as far as you're ever going to get in life. He knew I might say something like that. He also said to me this, Milton, the people in Alcoholics Anonymous have to love you or the resentment might get them drunk. Now that's heavy. You got to love me, ain't that something? Newcomer, we got to love you. Now, your prayer, if it's like mine, has been answered, and if you're as sick as I was, you won't recognize the answer to the prayer. Because if you're like me, when the bed used to spin round and round and round, and you stick your leg out there, and you make all them promises, oh, God, if you just get me off this one. Alcoholics act so strange when you say the word God. That's alcoholics are the prayingest folks I know. They pray all the time. Just pray. Oh, God, if you just get me off this drunk, I'll never do it ever again. In fact, I'll go to church. You know. You make all kind of wild promises. Like, you know, the one, the big one is, oh, God, just send me someone to love. Just like I am. Just one someone. And I'll be all right. You know, you make that promise. And here's John telling me, man, here's a whole room full of people got to love you just like you are. And I couldn't recognize it. My prayer had been answered. There was a room full of people that would love me. Not because they were wonderful. I don't want to give you that idea. He said because they cannot allow the resentment to get them drunk. So, newcomer, we have to love you because we're not going to allow the resenting of you to get us drunk. It's that simple. If we don't love you, we better act like we love you. We're going to make motions like we love you because we cannot, we will not allow you to get the power, give you the power to get us to drink again. And he said something else. He said, Milton, once an alcoholic, always an alcoholic. And I looked at Jenna and said, she. I had to die some more. Now, I'm an alcoholic that got everything he ever wanted drunk and sober. I wanted show business. And a member of Alcoholics Anonymous gave me a job. WRTV back in New York, and I perhaps was one of the first, second or third black singers on WRTV back years ago. And I quit that guy because he said the fan mail was just increasing, the show was doing good, so I quit him. And I quit him not because in my mind I'll make him realize how much he really needs me, but the truth of it was that I knew I didn't deserve it being there. I didn't deserve that. When you've caused pain to your family, when you've made your mother get up in church and ask the church to pray for you, which is embarrassing, you know. When you've done all, when you've run away from home, when you've hurt people, you know God's going to get you. He's going to get you. I don't care what you do. You may slide along for a little while. This old church song brings to mind, it said, the words of the song, you can run along here for a long time, but great God Almighty is going to cut you down. I knew that he was going to cut me down no matter how good it got, because I knew God as a punishing God, not as a loving God. Yeah. And so I quit and got another big show, one called Show of Shows. Many of you have seen that show. It was on for a long time. It was a big show, and I worked on that show for a while till the guy's wife walked up to me and said, Milton, you're upstaging my husband. And so I quit them too and got drunk at him to boot. And they begged me to come back, and my pride wouldn't let me do that. Then I moved with another group. God gave me another. I believe this from the bottom of my heart. God has always been trying to get my attention. And he's tried to give me the things I thought would make my life work. My mind. In my mind. What my mind is so small and so shallow. You know. My mind limits me. It absolutely limits me. And I didn't know that I had a limiting mind. I thought anything I grasped for, it was at my feet. The world was at my feet. But I didn't know that I was limited. But I didn't have that kind of power. And God was trying to get my attention. So he gave me the best. He gave me another big rock and roll group called the Dominoes, Billy Ward and the Dominoes. And I sang down in this town many, many times. Yeah. And I'll tell you this story because during the time working with these Dominoes, I went with these people and told them about my drinking. I didn't tell them about the jails I went to, of course. I didn't tell them about the nut wards I went to. I told them that I had a wife that didn't understand me. So that's why I drank, you know. And they said, we don't allow drinking here. And I said, that's fine. I remember down in San Diego here, I played one of my first one-nighters on the West Coast at some ballroom. I can't remember the ballroom down here. At some ballroom we did. Down here in San Diego. And I knew with this group, if I didn't drink, I'd have everything I'd want. The clothes, the cars, the women. pop my fingers and they'd come running. And this was in, I love women. I'm going to tell you something, I love women, crazy about them. Scared to death of them, but I'm just, you know. Yeah. I talk about mine. You guys won't talk about yours. I talk about mine. You see, because I was so hard covering me up. I didn't want them to know I was a wimp. That's how I felt. I felt like a wimp. I didn't want another guy to feel, you know, I didn't want a guy to know that I felt that I was less than him. You can't walk up to a guy and say, hey, dude, I feel less than you. But that's how you feel, you know, because the first thing the guy going to say, man, what you need to do is get your shit together. Right. And I had been doing that. He didn't understand I had been getting my shit together. When I get my shit together, I go to jail. So if you're new here, it's not about getting it together. You did that already. That's why you're sitting here. You know, you got it together, and this is what your getting together does for you. Nobody came here. Nobody's idea in life was, I think when I grow up, I'm going to become a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. To sit in these rooms where they talk that talk, and people sit in these hard chairs, and listen to somebody spew his guts out. That's not my life's ambition. I want to be tripping through the tulips, looking good. Well, I tell you, with this group for 10 years, I didn't, 12 years, in fact, I didn't drink. 12 most miserable years of my life. Playing all the smart supper clubs throughout the world. Feeling totally inadequate. Feeling worthless. I don't care how much adulation I got. And I was in the Bobby Sox era. That's that wild era that some of you don't know about, some of you have heard about, where they just rip your clothes off you and take your cufflinks. And I would dance sometime, and they just pass me over their heads out in the crowd, you know. And God, it was, you would think when you have all that kind of adulation, the very thing you think will make your life whole and well, it does nothing for the feelings of nothingness. It does nothing for that feeling of feeling less than your fellow man. It does nothing less for you to feel that I can't even walk to this girl and say, would you go out with me? Because if she knew what you were really like, she'd run 1,000 miles the other way. If she really knew what you were like, if you took a drink, you might go back to jail again. If she knew that you were really, drinking had been a problem to you in your life, she wouldn't have anything to do with you. These are the things that ran through my innards, my insides. If they just knew, if they knew what I was like, they'd go the other way. And I spent 12 years like that. The guys would have girlfriends, and I could see who was going with what girl, because lovers have looks. Lovers can look at each other, and they could be all the way down the end of the room. And you could be up on a stage, and you could see the look that would travel all the way across the room. Lovers look at each other, and they see it, and you see that little thing. It's like the light turns on. It's like an alcoholic's not, we see each other, and the light turns on. It's the light that turns on. I'd see that light. And these guys, man, I'd say, that's who he's going with. Yeah, yeah. And nobody was looking at me. Because I felt I was ugly. I felt nobody really wanted me. I'll tell you how desperate I was. There was one of the guys in the group that had a pot belly. And the girls used to like him more than anybody else. And sometimes they'd come up and just pat him on his belly. And I used to stand on stage with my belly sticking out so somebody come up and pat on me. That's where I was. And I made another great decision. I'm an alcoholic who knows how to make decisions. I'll tell you two decisions I made that caused me to get married. The first decision I made with my first wife is she wouldn't give me any, so I decided I'd marry her. She was a little church girl, and I knew if she didn't love me, God was going to get her. And my second wife was different. I knew I couldn't marry a woman of my own race. I had tried that. That didn't work. And I know today why I didn't want to marry another woman of my own race, because I felt I could never live up to whatever it was they expected of me. I just could never do that. Because some black women, you say, well, I need a man. I knew I was no man, so why mess with him? That's how I felt. That's really how I felt. I'd been down Hollywood Boulevard with some gorgeous showgirls. I mean, pretty. And God, they were so pretty. They, you know, you guys understand this. When you're walking with a real, an extra gorgeous looking girl, just gorgeous, stacked, and her little motorboat just runs right. You know what I mean? And you want to show off. You wish you could just put her on a pillow, right? And walk around and show it to the world. Mm-hmm. It's like saying, out of this world, she chose me, buddy. You know. That's the attitude you walk around with. And you don't walk, you strut, baby. You lay back. And you make her walk in front of you just a little bit. And you let the guys kind of watch the motorboat with you. Well, I was walking down Hollywood Boulevard one night with one of those gorgeous girls. And somebody hollered at her and said, "Hey, you nigger lover, you." And I knew she wasn't worth dying over. See, because I didn't carry a gun, nor did I carry a knife. Nor would I eat watermelon. Because if you had any of those things and did any of those things, that meant you were black, and I never wanted to be black. And I thought I was unique. I used to wear my hair processed, and I would get it wet so I could just shake it and shake it and kick it back. I didn't have no little cuckleberry sitting up on my head like those little knots. I didn't want you to think of me as some little black-faced kid sitting on some white picket fence down home with a slice of water well in his hand. Yeah. So God in his infinite wisdom knew what I needed. See, God loved me no matter what. He loves me no matter what. He sent me my wife. My prayer was answered. The right woman. And she was innocent, young, and naive, and knew nothing. And the Bible says, I use it whenever I need it. The Bible says, train a child in the way it should go, and it will not depart from you. So we started the training of Ruby. Now, what made Ruby so strikingly different and made me different? Because she made me different. See, Ruby's Chinese. She's Oriental. And no Chinese lady's supposed to be married to some black musician. That just don't happen. She's supposed to be married to some Chinese accountant, you know, but not some black musician. And, you know, I wanted the world to know that I was so different that he is different enough that he could be attracted to an Oriental person. Now, he's a different kind of a black. He ain't like the rest of them blacks. That was what I was trying to fight all my life. I wouldn't say no dis, dim, dat, and those. I said this and them and that and those. I didn't speak flat. You didn't catch me saying no yes or boss. That wasn't for me, you know. I had problems when I got here, I'm telling you. I didn't know how deep they were. And we started training Ruby. She was perfect. Ruby, you know, it was all design. I know how to design things well. The book talks about the director. I know how to write the script. I know how to play all the roles. And I had everybody pocketed the way I wanted them pocketed. I had show business career right. I had all the guys, the guy that owned the group. And then I had her. And I had everybody in place. And for 1 month, it was wonderful. Until she told me she was pregnant. And I said to her, "Well, we don't need to have any children, honey. I'm going to take you on the road." And it was a lie. See, I was a total lie as far as she was concerned. Because when she met me, I wasn't drinking, smoking, or doing anything. I was just sickeningly wonderful. It was in that period of time when I didn't drink for 12 years. And so she never met Milton. She met who I presented. And to make a long story short, we told her she can't have that baby. And I sent her down to San Diego, right down in San Diego, to one of my old exes. She didn't know it was one of my old exes. And the girl took her over to Mexico to get rid of that child. And she was supposed to call me. I was in Honolulu playing a nightclub.
I told her I was going to call her back at 6 o'clock. At 4 o'clock, she hadn't gotten rid of that baby. And she tells me that she had this girl, Dolores, stand up in her stomach to help her to abort. Now, I'm not proud of that, but that's what happened. That abortion is now 27 years old. That abortion has just graduated Northwestern University. That abortion has just been hired by Pepsi-Cola at $50,000 a year. God had started doing for us what we could not do for ourselves. Because I didn't want to take Ruby on the road. That would be like taking a sandwich to a banquet. You know, you don't do things like that. And to make a longer story shorter, she did everything that I thought would make my life work. She fed me in bed, oiled my body down, just did all those things. In fact, she even got a bell for her and Roseanne and said to me, "Milton, don't call me anymore. When you want me, just ring the bell." And I'd lay up in the bed, ting, ling, 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 ling. And she would come. She would feed me. She would give me the food, and I'd lay in bed, and she'd sit on the floor. Her and Roseanne would sit on the floor, and they'd watch me while I would eat. You know, I know some of you think it's chauvinistic. I know that. It isn't. It isn't. It really isn't chauvinistic. It's just sick. That's all. It's sick. I was telling somebody tonight, and we were sitting eating, Stu and Harriet, and I think it was Joy and old Bubble there. That sick folks attract sick folks. That was sick. We were two sick people together. Now, I'm going to tell you something. If you're old, it'll make no difference. Sick folks attract sick folks. You may want to quit your present situation because it ain't shaped up and doing what you think it should do. But I got news for you. You leave it, you're going to go to another sick one. That's how it is. Sick attract sick. You don't say that enough in AA. If you don't think sick attract sick, look and see what's sitting next to you. You know. There ain't no well people here. You know. That's just how it is. I didn't write those rules. That's how it is. I've been around here long enough to watch it. See, I've learned from watching. And that's, you know, I hear people in Alcoholics and I say, "Well, I wish I could go find me a normie. I don't want to mess around with these A&As." Guys are talking about these sick alcoholic women, and women are talking about these sick alcoholic men, and I want to go and find me a normie so I can have a meaningful relationship. That kills me. I'd like to have a meaningful relationship. You hear that? Oh, it's almost sickening. I want to have a relationship. I got news for you. If they're normie and they like you, they're sick. Now, if you think about it a little bit, if you're an alcoholic and you walk up to a normie and say, "Look, I'm an alcoholic. I've had a severe drinking and drug problem. And what I can tell you is this: I love you, but I can only tell you I can stay sober one day at a time. Will you marry me?" And if they say yes, that's it. You know, normal people think in terms of forever. Drunks don't understand that. Me and say, "Look, I'm an alcoholic. I've had a severe drinking and drug problem. And what I can tell you is this: I love you, but I can only tell you I can stay sober one day at a time. Will you marry me?" And if they say yes, that's it. You know, Normal people think in terms of forever. Drunks don't understand that. If you came to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous and said to you, you have to stay sober forever, you wouldn't stay here. There's no way you could commit to that. What makes Alcoholics Anonymous so wonderful and so simple, it deals with the possible. It is possible not to take a drink one day at a time. It is possible to bring the body to the seat. That's possible. I don't know what kind of sobriety you may wind up with. I don't know whether you're going to have a spiritual awakening or not. That's unimportant. What's important is that you don't take a drink and bring the body to the seat. I guarantee you, if you do those little simple things, something will happen to you. You can't happen to Alcoholics Anonymous. It happens to you because it's based a lot, in my personal opinion, on your envy and your jealousy, and you want what somebody else has. You came here with that. You came here with I'm not enough. And you come here with I'm not enough, you will want what somebody else has so you can have as much as they have. And based on that, you'll start doing some of the things sober people do. Sober people get involved with meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. Sober people do things that other sober people do. That's how they stay sober. They don't try to figure it out. If you're new here, don't figure it out, because you figure it out with a sick tool. You know, a tool that's been anesthetized with drugs, alcohol, it's a sick tool. When you have anesthetized your brain as long as I anesthetized mine, it ain't worth 2 cents. So put it aside. When I got to Alcoholics in 1967, and I did get here because I started back drinking again when I had everything I thought would make it work, a guy told me something that was very important, and I'm going to say this. It's almost time to quit. Shut up, sit down. He said to me, Milton, quit listening to you. I said, what do you mean? I said, who should I listen to? He said, everybody else except you. That made sense to me. He said, because you've listened to yourself all the way to the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous. Quit listening to you. And he said, then do what you see sober people do. I oftentimes hear people in Alcoholics Anonymous say, well, get as many phone numbers as you can. My ego would not let me do that. My pride would not let me do that. Wendell said to me, get one. That's possible. He didn't deal with the impossibles or the probables. He said, get one. He said, call that person the next day. And I said, what for? He said, just call them and tell them somebody else told you to do this. And I've been doing that for almost 23 years. I've been talking to a member of Alcoholics Anonymous for almost 23 years, every day. The only time I missed not talking to a member of Alcoholics Anonymous was when I was in the intensive unit after having a heart attack. Yeah. I didn't talk to a member of Alcoholics Anonymous for 4 days. They wouldn't let me. But you see, I do the simple things they told me to do when I got here. They told me that this program would work. I came here with the willingness to let people tell me anything and do anything they said do. Anything. Anything. Do whatever they said. Just be willing to do that. And I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, $40,000 in the hole. And I owed it to the mob, and they don't play around with you. They burn you. They burn you in a hurry. And when I got sober, I went to these people and said, look, I'm a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm trying to get my life in order, and I want to pay you. You see, God had given me a job. And I'll tell you what the job was. It was a handkerchief head job. Pushing a broom down Santa Monica Boulevard there in Los Angeles. And all I knew about pushing that broom was it was designed to get me to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's designed for that. I'm not what I do. The moment I become what I do, I will get in trouble. Today, I have a little maintenance business. You know what I do? I push the broom. And sometimes the broom and the mop gets heavy. And you want to say, who needs this shit? But I also remember the line in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous says to me that I have a new employer. And so what I do when that broom gets heavy, I say, Milton, you're pushing the broom for God. And the strangest thing, the broom gets light. You see, because God knows more about me than I do. I don't know whether I understand God or not. It's not important that I understand God. What's important is that I know he understands me. You know,
He absolutely understands me. He gives me what I need when I need it, and it's on time. He puts the right people in my life to move me to whatever place he wants me, not where I want to go. Because I've been every place I know how to go. And the most amazing thing has happened to me. We not only have one daughter, we have two. And I've gone through that thing about having to tell them the truth. And the most, it's scary. It's scary for a drunk to be honest. I don't know about you, but it was scary for me to be honest. To tell somebody, here's where I am. It was just scary. And I had to finally one day tell that 13-year-old who was insane. When you're 13, you're crazy. You're just nuts. You know, I had to tell that 13-year-old of mine that, look, I don't know how to be a father. Will you teach me how to be your kind of father? I had to tell her the truth. And we started a wonderful love affair, and we're still lovers to this day. I remember telling her, Roseanne, my name is Milton. You can call me Milton. You don't have to call me Daddy. And she said to me, well, I know, Dad, I can't. You know, you're 13 years. I can't do that. I said, whenever you choose, call me Milton. That's my name. Two or three days later, she came out and said, hey, Milt, how are you? The most fabulous thing in the world, a thing happened to me inside. It looked like I just got full. And I almost wanted to float. Because a miracle had happened. That this child had found the freedom, the safety, in which to say, hi, Milt, how are you? That's a gift. It worked for her, so I said, I'm going to do the same thing for my wife, and that's a hell of a chance. You see, after a year's sobriety, she had become a member of Al-Anon and learned how to talk back. You know, and I don't put Al-Anon down at all. Don't make any, I hear them talk about black belts. They ain't no black belts. I believe it's more difficult for them to work this program than a drunk. I have something to blame mine on. They ain't got nothing. And it's difficult. And so I think I just marvel at them because I've watched it. I've watched it. I've been given the opportunity to share a lot of Al-Anon meetings. And I watch it. I marvel at it. I don't know how my wife grows, but I hear her. I say, my God, she's changed just like I've changed. We're married 28 years. That's an impossibility for two crazy people like us. And I had to tell her I don't know how to be a husband. Teach me how to be your kind of husband. And they're tough. They're tough. They're tough lessons. But I have found out the way I live my life is that I take my wife and my children. I have a younger daughter, and she's the same way. I have to tell her the same thing. I tell that younger daughter, teach me, and she does. But the most amazing thing I've come up with is not about whether I'm the head of the home or I'm the man of the house or all those things. What I know is that I take my children and my wife and all of you, as God's messengers to me. And I get my messages through them. So when they tell me what to do, I just go ahead and do it. Because it doesn't come out their way. It comes out God's way. And after all, the mere fact that I'm willing to please God, I believe pleases God. It's that simple. I'm freer than I've ever been before in my life. And I always close with this. There's a song that used to go in church. The words of the song go like this. Oh, freedom. Oh, freedom. Oh, freedom over me, my Lord. And before I'll be a slave, I'll be buried in my grave and go home to my Lord and be free. That's what the old slaves used to sing when they picked cotton. And they were so tired of that thing called slavery. Before they'd become slaves again, they'd rather be dead and buried in their grave so they'd go home to their Lord and be free. Because they knew where the Lord was, freedom was. Alcoholic slavery. All about it. We're not strangers to slavery. And I stand here tonight to tell you before I take another drink, drop another pill, smoke another funny cigarette or snort another line, I too would rather be dead and buried in my grave so I could go home to my God. And be free. Because I know where God is, freedom is. Martin Luther King said it another way. And he finished one of his many speeches this way. He said, free at last, free at last. Thank God Almighty, I'm free at last. Thank you.
Now the speaker, Milton Merle, singing the Lord's Prayer.
Our Father, which art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done in earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our debts as we forgive our debtors. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom and the power and the glory forever.
The beginning of the meeting, cakes, etc., follows immediately. Thank you.
Welcome, everyone, to the Easy Does It Speakers Meeting. My name is Jeff, and I'm an alcoholic. Are there any other alcoholics in the room tonight? Welcome. How about Al-Anon? Welcome. Tonight, our leader is Lisa. Yeah.
Hi. My name is Lisa, and I'm an alcoholic. Okay. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. So that we may get better acquainted, are there any newcomers within their first 30 days of sobriety here tonight? If so, would you please stand and give us your first name, starting at the right front?
My name's Tom, I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Tom. Is that it? Okay, welcome. And are there any visitors from outside the San Diego area? Tonight I've asked Ed to read a portion of Chapter 5 from the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous entitled How It Works. Ed.
My name is Ed and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Ed.
How It Works. Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. Those who do not recover are people who cannot or will not completely give themselves to this simple program. Usually men and women who are constitutionally incapable of being honest with themselves. They are such unfortunates. They are not at fault. They seem to be born that way. They are naturally incapable of grasping and developing a manner of living which demands rigorous honesty. Their chances are less than average. There are those, too, who suffer from a grave emotional and mental disorders, but many of them do recover if they have the capacity to be honest. Our stories disclose in a general way what we used to be like, what happened, and what we are like now. If you have decided you want what we have and are willing to go to any length to get it, then you are ready to take certain steps. At some of these we balked. We thought we could find an easier, softer way, but we could not. With all the earnestness in our command, We beg of you to be fearless and thorough from the very start. Some of us have tried to hold on to our old ideas, but the result was nil until we let go absolutely. Remember that we deal with alcohol, cunning, baffling, and powerful. Without help, it is too much for us. But there is one who has all power. That one is God. May you find him now. Half measures availed us nothing. We stood at the turning point. We asked his protection and care and with complete abandon. Here are the steps we took, which are suggested as a program of recovery. 1. We admitted we were powerless over alcohol. Their lives had become unmanageable. 2. Came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3. Made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. 4. Made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5. Admitted to God, ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. 6. We're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7. Humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. 8. Made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9. Made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10. Continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. 12. Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and practice these principles in all of our affairs. Many have exclaimed, "What an order! I can't go through with it." Do not be discouraged. No one among us has been able to maintain anything like perfect adherence to these principles. We are not saints. The point is, we are willing to grow along spiritual lines. The principles we have set down are guides to progress. We claim spiritual progress rather than spiritual perfection. Our description of the alcoholic, the chapter to the agnostic, and the personal adventures before and after make clear three pertinent ideas. A, we were alcoholic and could not manage our own lives. B, that probably no human power could have relieved us of our alcoholism. And see that God couldn't wield if you're sought.
The token to Jeff from Jeff.
Hi, everybody. My name's Jeff, and I'm an alcoholic. Well, I had a lot of things in mind I was going to say, but I have to be honest, so. I really like this guy a lot, you know. I met him when he was 3 days sober at a meeting, and you know, he went through treatment a bunch of times. He didn't stay sober, and he really wasn't working a program. He wasn't getting involved, and I guess getting into service. And this last time I met him about 90 days ago, he seemed really willing. You know, he was beat. He was tired of putting a needle in his arm and drinking. And yeah, I'm really glad that I know him, because he's a really neat guy. I get to work with him, and I give him rides to work, and go to meetings. And, yeah, I just love him a lot, and I hope he stays around here. And he's doing the things he needs to do, like staying involved and getting a lot of phone numbers and stuff. And I present him with this 90-day token, and I love him a lot. Yeah.
I'm Jeff. I'm an alcoholic. There's a lot of people out here. I don't know really what to say, but you know, I want to say thank you to my uncle Ray that you know brought me to this meeting 90 days ago, 93 days ago actually. You know, I want to thank the group for helping me get a job through the program and you know getting a relationship through my parents. I want to thank all my friends, and I especially want to thank Steve Lewis. Thank you.
Okay, our second 90-day token is to Kim from Tracy.
My name is Tracy Shadler, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Tracy.
And this is Kim. I met her a week ago, and she's a little special to me. She's scared right now. But she's gone through a lot this past week since I've known her, and you know, I'll let her tell her own story. But she's serious about the program, and I know how she knows how important it is for her life. And she's this real special girl. And she needs a sponsor.
Oh my
Jeez. Hi, everybody. Gosh, I don't know what to say. I'm, like, really nervous.
Who are you?
I'm Kim. I'm an alcoholic. I was confined in Las Colinas, and I just got out, so I'm, like, really scared to see, like, all these people. gosh, I don't know what to say. You know, it was hard. I went to Las Colinas due to drinking and driving. I was in a really serious car accident. And thank God that I found this program because, boy, my life was unmanageable. And I was lucky to be alive. And it was hard because I've never been in trouble before. And to have something so dramatic happen to me, it was hard. It was like when I went there, it was everybody else's fault for me being there. And everybody else was an asshole and everything else and the deputies and, you know. And now I thank God that I was sent there because I learned a really hard lesson. And thanks to this program, I met a lot of panel people in there. And that's the first thing I did when I got out was went to meetings. And I don't know what to say, just thanks.
Okay, now would the birthday people please step over to the cake, and we're going to sing you happy birthday. Okay, everybody?
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you.
Here you go.
Happy birthday.
Our first one is going to be 1 year to Rich from Chuck.
I am Chuck, alcoholic.
Hi,
this is my good friend Richie. I met Rich about 6 months ago when I started hanging out with people, the younger people in AA. And he was one of the first people that I really got to know real good because I was really scared to let people get to know me. And for some reason, he kind of got right in there. And a scary thing that happened... a weird thing that happened was we were sitting outside of a girlfriend's, his old girlfriend's house. And he goes, I'm getting out of the Navy pretty soon. I'm looking for a roommate. I want to get an apartment or something. And it was weird because it was the first time I was sober and I did one of these deals. It's like, sure, okay, let's do it. You know, something like when I was drinking. And the weird thing about it, about a month and a half later, we're doing it. We're in our own apartment and things are working out good. And I thought there was going to be a lot of hassles and a lot of, you know, confrontations and a lot of disagreements. But it turned out to be all right. We can sit down and we can talk and we can relate to different things. And we ask each other's advice. And we've walked through a lot together. And I've seen a lot of growth in Rich, a lot of growth. And I just hope it keeps coming back. Congratulations.
I'm Rich. I'm an alcoholic. I don't know. It was because like the apartment deal. We don't know where all the money came from. It was legal. I mean. But the money just seemed to, I don't know, it's like, you know, you need all that money first and last and all the, you know, all that money to get in. And it seemed like I got out of the Navy and I know one place, he had to sell his motorbike. Poor guy. Everything just came together. It was kind of like one of those things, you know, you say, Drake, yeah, let's go, you know, let's do this. Yeah, and you never do it. And it just, that's the way we kind of put it across. And it was like a month later, we were in our own apartment. I mean, just things just happened, miracles, you know. We didn't know, like I said, we didn't have a lot of money. It just seems like we just had enough to get in. You know, we had enough to get in, enough to, we didn't have anything. And that's another miracle about the program. Everything we got in our house is from somebody else. none of it's ours. Hey, but it's an apartment. It's our home, you know. We like it. It's been a good year. I've learned a lot of things. The biggest thing I learned was how to stay sober, of course, but friendships. And I've gotten some really close friends and letting some people really close inside of me. Let them see who Rich really is. And other people let me close to them, like Chuck. And I've learned a lot about me, and I got a lot more to learn. And I've learned a lot about my God, and hopefully I'll just keep learning more. Because I know I couldn't have made it this far without my friends and my God. And this program has given me all that. Thanks.
Two years now to Pat from Steve.
I'm Steve. I'm an alcoholic. And this is Pat, I sponsor. And when I was his age, I was sitting on the seventh floor of Fort Ord Hospital. If anybody's been up in Monterey, I was in a nut ward, and due to my alcoholism. And it's nice to see these young people come to this program who didn't have to go down the same road that I had to go to get here. You know, and it's Pat's one of those examples on how this program does work. You know, when he asked me to sponsor him a couple of years ago, I told him to get involved and to participate in his own recovery, and the son of a bitch listened to me. You know? And I was overwhelmed because every time I see him at a meeting, he's coming to these meetings here 2 hours earlier and setting up the chairs, and he's at another meeting making coffee, and he even calls his sponsor, and he follows simple suggestions. And if you're new, you know, ask Pat at the end of the meeting how he does it. He gets involved with the program. He doesn't sit on the fence, you know. And Pat, congratulations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm an alcoholic named Pat Bach. Wow. Oh, this is a miracle just by just standing up here. When I first came here, I couldn't really stand in front of people like a crowd like this. And I'm real happy today. It seemed like the 2 years went real fast. I got a sponsor and I started just getting involved and all that. And I go to a meeting on a regular basis and just, I have a lot of commitments, and it's like, you know, I work and I go to a meeting, it's like I'm so busy, it's like this time's flying by. And, you know, today I really enjoy myself. I mean, just the space I'm in. I don't know, it's just glad to be here, you know, and I just get commitments and just stay involved and just show up and just do what's in front of me, and I just show up. Thanks.
We have 3 years to Jeff from Phil.
Thank you. My name is Phil and I'm an alcoholic. And this is a great deal here. I was just thinking when Jeff was giving the other Jeff a token, this Jeff had called me about 3 weeks ago on the phone, and he had just got a job working with this other Jeff, and he says, man, I can't work with this guy. I just can't work with this guy. And I says, oh, really, why? And he says, because I am laughing all day long. I can't stop laughing at this guy, and I can't work. And that's one of the great things about this program, you know, is I get to have friends like Jeff, and I've known Jeff for probably a little over 2 years now. And You know, I would do anything for him, you know? And the best thing about that is that he knows it. You know, I don't have to tell him. And I know that he would do the same for me, you know? When he's down, he calls me, you know, and we talk on the phone a lot, you know? And we see each other at least 2 meetings a week. And he does what he has to do, you know? He'll call me and say, you know, he's pissed off because he's got to work this step. And I'll say, I'm pissed off because I haven't worked that step. And, you know, that's what it's all about, you know. We get to have real friends around here. I had a lot of fair weather friends when I was out there, you know. Whoever was buying was my friend. And I don't have to buy anything for Jeff, and he don't have to buy anything for me, and we love each other a lot, you know. And I'm glad to see that he's getting 3 years, because he really deserves it. Congratulations.
Hey everybody, my name's Jeff, and I'm an alcoholic. Wow, 3 years, fuck. I guess you say it's the best 3 years of my entire life, you know, Alcoholics Anonymous has given me. I wish I could take credit, you know, I've worked for my sobriety, you know, by getting commitments in AA, and, but then again, it's a gift from the fellowship, too. I'd just like to thank my sponsor for good sponsorship, Alcoholics Anonymous, the fellowship, a God as I understand today, and you know life's not fair. That's one thing I've learned since I've been sober. I came to this program. I didn't know what to expect. I didn't expect anything. I didn't expect anything to change. I didn't believe in God. I hated everybody. I hated myself. You know, and I didn't see what a book and these meetings and you people could do to help change the feelings that I had inside. And I guess from just coming, keep coming, and other people loving me, I've learned to love myself. And, you know, I've done a lot in my sobriety, and I've had a lot of fun. It's not always fun, but most of the time it is. And just thanks for letting me take a cake.
Okay, let's see now. We have a 5-year cake to... Oh, okay, is it written up here? Did I skip over? I'm sorry. Okay. All right. Okay. 2 years to Mary Beth from Linda.
My name's Linda, and I'm an alcoholic. This is my friend, Mary Beth. I met her at a Tuesday night step study, and I gave her my phone number, and I didn't know she'd call me, and she's one person that has continually called me since I've known her. We have become really good friends, and that's real special to me. And we're both open and honest with each other, and that's the gift this program's given us. And I just want to tell her I'm proud of her. My sponsor gave me this when I got 2 years in here. Thank you.
My name is Mary Beth, and I'm an alcoholic. I am so grateful to be sober. I can't even tell you. It's a miracle for this alcoholic to have not taken a drink in 2 years. Just truly a miracle. You know, I came in here a helpless, hopeless fool. And this program has given me a chance at life again. You know, a chance to really live. And it's only because of you people in this room. It really is. I've got some really, really special people in my life today. Really special. And I've got my parents here tonight. Thank you for coming. You guys mean the world to me. And my brother. And I don't know. I've been given a lot of chances. And, you know, I think what I'm most grateful for is the chance to love my daughter again and to love my family and just be able to live and to laugh and to love others and allow other people to love me, because I wasn't capable of loving anybody, and I was just selfish and self-centered and me. And today I can extend my hand and I can help others. And if I have anything to say to the new people, it's that you don't have to commit to drinking, to quit drinking for the rest of your life. You can do it one day at a time. because that's the only thing that kept me in Alcoholics Anonymous. I was ready to quit doing drugs, but I wasn't ready to quit drinking. And one lady said to me, Mary Beth, you only have to quit for today. And if you can do that, that's all you need to worry about. And that's pretty amazing that I don't have to worry about tomorrow, you know, or project on all the crap for the future, because all I have is today. You know, yeah, I have 2 years, but if I drink tomorrow, it's all gone. So I'm just going to keep coming back, and thank you to everybody that has loved me.
Okay, now we have 5 years to Linda from Jane. Hey, Linda.
Hi, I'm Jane. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Jane.
This is a real special friend. So, you know, Linda's one of those miracles that this year especially, it's been necessary quite a few times for her to drink, but she hasn't. She has used the tools, and she found a higher power here. And yeah, I'm shaking. You know, it's just neat to see someone do the things around here, to work the steps, get involved, and just keep coming back year after year, a day at a time. You know, it's just so special that God has put a lot of wonderful people in my life. And because of people like you, Linda's in my life. And, you know, I've watched her grow. She doesn't count tiles anymore. She used to worry me walking through a room. Now she looks at us and, you know, it's...
Still taking the clothes off.
I didn't say that, you did. you know, thank you for her. I love you.
My name's Linda and I'm an alcoholic. I'm real grateful to be sober today. This program's, giving me a new way of life. This year it's been not all that easy, it hasn't been all that easy, but I was told no matter what, you know, I could stay sober as long as I continued to stay involved in the program and go to meetings and reach out my hand. And I still, a few months ago I went into isolation, and a few people in this program still called me, and I don't know, I just do that from time to time. If you're new, just keep coming back. My life today, no matter what's going on, has been better than it ever has. And I couldn't do without the fellowship, without Jane. I want to thank Jane for giving me my cake. I didn't know from day one, Jane reached her hand out to me if I'd stay here. But a day at a time, it's all added up to 5 years, and I don't know, that just is, it's amazing to me. And I know today I have a loving God in my life. And I didn't have any of this when I got here. I didn't believe in God. I really didn't believe in anything. You guys gave me hope. And that's what's kept me coming back. I know no matter what, I can stay sober today as long as I stay here. I love you. Thank you.
Congratulations, everybody. We have no dues or fees.
I'm an alcoholic named Mo. Here's the 12 traditions. One, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon AA unity. Two, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. Three, the only requirement for AA membership is a desire to stop drinking. Four, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or AA as a whole. Five, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the alcoholic who still suffers. Six, an AA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the AA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, unless problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. Seven, Every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8. Alcoholics Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9. AA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10. Alcoholics Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues. Hence, the AA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and films. And 12. Anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities.
Thank you. Tonight, our speaker is Milton M. from Van Nuys. Even for you, our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order, but obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and we will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then. Please form a circle.
Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, and the power, and the glory, forever. Amen.
He's coming back. It works.
It sure do. Right.
Thank you. Tonight, our speaker is Milton M. from Van Nuys.
Good evening. My name is Milton Merle, and I'm a grateful alcoholic. I'm glad to be here, I think.